All right, good morning, everybody. We are going to start our Parsha Shir today, which is both taking place live and also live streaming on the internet. I can see already that a number of people have logged on, so it's a delight to welcome everybody who's present here and also all of our listeners on the World Wide Web. We're going to switch the format a little bit in terms of the Parsha Shir. Traditionally, I should say, over the past few months, we've been looking at more of the medieval commentaries during the week and 19th century biblical commentaries on Shabbos morning. I thought we would switch it up now and put more of our focus on the 19th century commentaries during the week and perhaps more emphasis on the medieval commentaries on Shabbos morning. So let's begin in the very beginning. We're looking right now at source number one for those of you who are listening on the internet, so I'll go nice and slow with the text. This is the very beginning of the Parsha, Perek Lamed Beis Pasuk Dalid. The Torah tells us, Vayishlach Yaakov Melachim Lefanav El Esav Achiv Artza Seir Sidei Edom. Jacob sent angels ahead of him to encounter his brother Esav to the land of Seir, the field of Edom. What was the purpose of sending these messengers? So the Torah tells us the next pasuk, Vayitzavo samli mor, and he commanded them, saying, Kosom run laduni leisav, ko amar avdecha Yaakov, im lav angarti ve'echar ad ata. And he commanded them, saying, So shall you say to my master, to Esav, Thus said your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Lavan, and I have tarried until now. Listen to that very subservient language that Yaakov uses, right? What does he call Esav? He calls Esav my master. How does he identify himself as? Avdecha, your servant. Vahi lishor v'chamor tzon v'eved v'shivcha v'ashlecha lahagid la'adoni limtzochein b'enecha. And I have acquired oxen and donkeys, flocks, manservants and maidservants, and I have sent to tell this to my master to find favor in your eyes. So before we jump into the 19th century biblical commentaries, we're going to go back a couple of centuries prior to the Radak. The Radak's question, if you will, even though he doesn't address directly a question, but the Radak's question is, why does Yaakov need to take such a weak stance? I'm nobody. Esav, you are my master. I am your servant. Let's recall from Parshas Vayetze, when Yaakov is running away from Esav, he has an encounter on Har HaMoriah. And what does God tell Yaakov? Do you recall? What does God tell Yaakov at that point? He says, Yaakov, wherever you go, I will protect you. Whoever comes to attack you, I will shield you. So why do we find Yaakov afraid? Yaakov is clearly filled with such anxiety. The Torah is going to tell us a verse or two later that Yaakov is literally afraid and he has anxiety. What's there to be anxious about if God has already told you explicitly, wherever you go, I will take care of you? So writes the Radak as follows in source number two. Vayishlach Yaakov melachim. Af al pi sheftichu hakel kama pamim. Even though God has already promised Yaakov on a number of occasions that God will protect him, God will watch over him, he was still afraid of his brother. First of all, Esav was seething, was extremely upset when Yaakov stole the brachas. That's ultimately why Yaakov had to run away. And this is a topic we've discussed in a number of different contexts, that Yaakov was afraid, Shema Yigrom Hachit. What does that phrase mean? What does that phrase mean? Shema means perhaps. Gore means to cause. Chet is sin. Perhaps sin has caused. Perhaps sin has caused what? No, not exactly. Perhaps the sin of Yaakov, or the sins of Yaakov, have caused Yaakov to lose some of his protection. Right? God says to Yaakov, I'm going to protect you. the sort of the unspoken word at that moment, of course, is that I'm only going to protect you if you remain the Yaakov Avinu that I love. But if you end up sinning, if you veer off the path, so I'm not going to protect you. This is not an absolute bracha that will exist under every single circumstance. If Yaakov would have chas v'sholom decided to go worship idolatry, if he would have become ensnarled in Laban's home and ultimately gives up the path of Torah, mitzvos, chas v'sholom, would Hashem's bracha still have applied? I don't think so. So Yaakov is afraid, Shema yigor machit, perhaps sin has caused him to lose favor in the eyes of God. And that's why he was very, very anxious. And that's why Yaakov felt the need to send messengers to Esav, to placate Esav. V'shalach lo malachim me'anshav lefanav. And Yaakov sends messengers from his camp in front of him, she'yavohu limtzochim be'enav, to find favor in the eyes of Esav. So that's the Radak's, a very important explanation, commentary at this moment, that Yaakov was fearful, despite receiving assurances from God, because Yaakov felt that maybe when God promised me what he did, I was on a certain level, and maybe since then I have dropped down, I have sinned, and I am no longer worthy of the blessings that God has promised me. Very interesting. So Alan is suggesting that maybe that the actual act of stealing the brachos, maybe that itself made God upset. And that's why Yaakov was fearful. But I would disagree with that based on the chronology. Who can tell me why we could disagree with Alan? Anyone could disagree with Alan. Certainly Doris can disagree with Alan, right? But basically the answer is as follows. Because Yaakov's vision of the ladder and the angels and God comes after he steals the brachos. So if you'll tell me that what Yaakov did stealing the blessings was wrong and therefore God's not so pleased, why do you have the vision afterward where God said, I'm going to take care of you? The implication of the timeline itself is that God was not upset at Yaakov for stealing the blessings, and God, in fact, responds to Yaakov's anxiety at that moment where he has to flee from his brother, saying, don't worry, Yaakov, wherever you go, I will protect you.
Today we might be tempted to say, Yaakov was wondering if he didn't really just imagine this.
Perhaps. Perhaps. Fair point, Bernie. Fair point. So let's think about the Radak's commentary, and it will serve as a bridge to the 19th century, to the Malbim in particular. If Yaakov was afraid, if Yaakov felt that maybe the assurances that I received from God are no longer going to be relevant because I have sinned and I have dropped down, and I therefore need to beseech my brother, I need to take a very subservient approach, I have to show him that he's still the boss. Okay, so if you wanted to send such messages to your brother, who you think hates you, so what type of language, what type of ideas would you draw upon? Some of those ideas I think we already mentioned. Yaakov calls Esav his master. Yaakov calls himself the servant.
I think but, trying to...
Right, but just one moment. But then he goes in a very odd direction. If you're trying to express how you haven't really made it in life, how all of the brachos that Yitzchak has promised never really materialized into anything, so would you play up your material success? Or do you play down your material success? What do you think? What's the simple understanding? You would imagine that somebody that's trying to take a very weak stance, trying to show how little I have accomplished, would not focus on all of the material successes. But again, look back at source number one, verse 6, Pasuk Vav. Vayi lishor v'chamor tzon v'eved v'shivcha. I have donkey, flocks, manservants, and maidservants, right? To use sort of update the language to the 21st century, it's like Yaakov would have said, you know, Nebuch, Esav, all I've been able to accomplish is to buy a few Lexuses and to, you know, live in a big fancy house, and I've got an apartment in Fort Lee, and an apartment in Florida, an apartment in Yerushalayim. If a person's trying to play down their success, I don't think he would focus on those particular accomplishments.
But I think what he was, maybe what he was trying to do is he was
Okay, interesting. So Alan is saying that maybe Yaakov is trying to send the message to Esav that I have been successful and I'm here to help you if you need. But that doesn't seem to be contextually correct. Because Yaakov is afraid of Esav, that Esav is still harboring hatred and resentment in his heart. So why would he come along saying, I've made it, but if you need help, I'm there to help you. I think that would be just putting salt on the wound. So, okay, that's true.
If he was desperate and needed help, he would say, my brother's here to help me. Maybe he's sorry.
But I don't think that's the card that Yaakov was playing. I don't think that's the card that Yaakov was playing. So where do you see that in the verse? So says Rabbi Reiner, for those of you who are listening in live on the World Wide Web, and Baruch Hashem, I see there are a number of people that have clicked on the link, which is wonderful. So says Rabbi Reiner, Yaakov is trying to suggest to Esav that all of the brachos of the Tata of Yaakov never really materialized. Where do you see that? Vahili shor v'chamor tzon v'ebet b'shivcha. I've got oxen and donkeys, manservants and maidservants. I don't know, that sounds pretty good to me. But you're right, Rabbi Reiner. And I'll tell you who says you're right. The Malbim. In source number 3, the Malbim, one of the great German 19th century biblical commentaries, writes as follows. Vayitzavo samaymor. Sam befihem devarim lohotzi hamistama sheyesh le'esav olav ala brachos. That Yaakov provides the language to these messengers that will actually take away some of the anger and resentment that Esav was feeling. Ulohoros lo shelo niskaimu vo rak be'Esav. And to show Esav that all of those wonderful brachos, they only were accomplished, they only came through Esav and not through Yaakov. Achar shekavanas aviv haya al Esav. After all, when the Tata was sitting down to give the brachas, who did the Tata have in mind? Who do you think had in front of him? Esav. So Yaakov is trying to show Esav that since Yitzchak had you in mind, I didn't get any of the riches that Dad promised. V'hinei ala bracha havi gevir le'achacha. When Yitzchak said, you will be the master to your brother, has that happened? What does Yaakov say? Tell Esav, ko samrun la'adoni le'esav, ko amar abdecha Yaakov. Ladies and gentlemen, who's the master? Who's the master? Esav. Right? Again, Yitzchak says, Hevi gevir la'achacha, you will be the master over your brother. And through Yaakov's language, you see clearly that Yaakov felt that he was not the master. He was the servant. She Esav hu adon v'hagevir. V'chein ha'la ha'bracha kolel es kol ich achav u'mishpachto. And the Malbim suggests that Yaakov is also trying to suggest to his brother that the brachos really spread upon everybody. Everyone in the family received the bracha. Let's keep on going. Hine im Lavan garti, I have been sojourning with Lavan. Kigir be'eretz, lo kigivir u'moshel. I have been a ger. What's a ger? A foreigner. I have been a foreigner in the land. I have not somebody in charge. V'gam sha'bracha haisa mital ha'shamayim u'mishmanei ha'aretz. And Yitzchak said that the brachos will come from the dew of the heavens and the riches of the land. V'zenes kaimo be'esav. This happened with you, Esav, not with me. She'kivesh eretz miuchades v'husaru moshel sham. Esav, you're the one that's conquered lands. I've been a foreigner with Lavan. I have no land, no property to show. You're the one that you've conquered Seir. You're the one that's in charge. Lo bi, not me. Shegarti be'eretz loli. I've been a foreigner in a land that's not mine. V'lo tomar, and don't say, ki od chazon lemoed, she'iskai mubasir, and don't tell me, well, you haven't given enough time, Yaakov, to see the brachos really materialize. Shehalo v'acher adata zezman rav. I've been there for a long time. We know that Yaakov was with Lavan for how long? Over 20 years. So you'll tell me that Esav's going to say, well, Yaakov, you're still going to get the brachos. It just hasn't happened yet. Yaakov is telling his brother, I've been ready for 20 years waiting. And I've got no real estate at all. I've got no deed on any land to show for my successes. So far, what the Malbim has done has showed us that in Pasuk Hey, where Yaakov calls himself a servant, and Yaakov points out that he has been a foreigner in a land for a long time, he's giving over the message to Esav that no good has come from his father's brachos, from the stolen brachos. Next paragraph, Vayihi. V'od, shehabracha hu shehe shefa v'atzlacha l'mala miderech hateva. The bracha that Yitzchak gave was that there was going to be material success in a supernatural way. V'ani hama'at asher yesh li ba berov amav yegia. You know how my material success has come to me? Through a lot of hard work. V'zesha kasav v'acher ad ata. That's another meaning of the words that I have sort of stalled up to now. I've gotten nowhere. I've been slaving away. And only now, after 20 years, do I have something to show for it. And what do I have? I've got oxen and donkeys. Lo kodem achen. Rak achar avuda avoda shel isrim shana. After 20 years, I finally have something to show for my work. V'gam lo bracha rabba. It's not like I've even got very much. Rak shur v'chamor. I only have an oxen and a donkey. Me'at mi kol min. These are not the impressive livestock. This is not a Lexus. This is driving, you know, a Pasha de Yid's car. Honda Accord. I drive a Honda Accord, so I can draw upon my own modest car. Okay, a Honda Accord. I'm not driving a Lexus. I've got no Mercedes to my name. Me'at mi kol min. V'gam she'ikr ha'bracha haya be'karkaos. Yitzchak's blessing was focused on the land, mishmanei haaretz v'rov dagon v'sirosh, the fats of the land and the produce. Umizeh ein li mumah. I've got nothing to show from that perspective. Not only that, v'ani tzarich levakish makom l'sheves bartzacha. I have nothing to. I'm such a foreigner. I have to ask you permission to come through your land. One second, v'al korchach, and that's why v'eshlecha la'agil la'adoni l'mtzochein be'enecha. That's why I'm sending these messengers to find favor in your eyes, because I have nobody else to turn to. So the brilliance of the Malbim is that when you look at the psukim at first glance, you think Yaakov's a meshugna. He's trying to placate his brother, trying to tone down the resentment, but he's actually bragging. It doesn't make any sense. And the Malbim says, no, if you break down each and every phrase in this message, you see that Yaakov is just trying to give over to Esav that nothing has come from the Tata's bracha. I am your servant, I have no land, I have worked hard, and all I have to show is a shor v'chamor, which is not a very impressive, which is not a very impressive cattle. And therefore, Esav, I beg of you, you know, let me pass through and please don't hate me anymore, because nothing has come from my subterfuge that we read about in our last week's Torah portion. Okay, questions before we move on.
It seems to me that he's being overly subservient to try desperately to turn Esav around.
Yeah.
I don't understand why he felt that.
Very good. So it's interesting, you know, if you look at the Medrash, there are some Midrashim that are exceedingly critical of Yaakov's very weak stance at this moment. There's a Medrash, I don't have it in front of me, that says something to the effect of, since Yaakov called himself an Eved at this moment, in the future his children, his progeny, were destined to be Avadim to, you know, various different world powers. So the Medrash is saying, Yaakov, why are you so meek and weak? Why don't you stand up for yourself? But this is the way Yaakov felt. This is the way Yaakov felt. He clearly does take a very meek stance when standing up to Esav. The Nitziv in Ha'amek Davar, in source number 4, says something along the lines of the Malbim, but he doesn't plug it into each and every phrase as the Malbim does. He sort of gives a more macro perspective. Look at what the Nitziv writes. Going on the words, Vahili Shor v'chamor v'eshlecha la'gi la'adoni, haynu l'kabel hamatana she'etein lach. So I'm going to be sending you some presents. I hope that you'll accept them. V'lo haya bazem mosif kina behodio ki asa ash osher. Says the Malbim, the Yaakov did not think he would be adding to Esav's jealousy by sending these gifts. Ki ashirus Bili gedula hanhaga eino inyan le'esav liknos. Let's read that again. Ki ashirus bili gedulas hanhaga. It's really one phrase. Riches without gedulas hanhaga. What's hanhaga? Hanhaga? No, that's hana'a. What's a manhig? A manhig is a ruler. So to have riches without gedulas hanhaga, without being a person of authority, without being in charge, eno inyon le'esav liknos. There's nothing to be jealous of. Basically, if you have lots of money, but you have no real, you know, political clout, if you're a no-name, so that's not such a big deal. Esav wasn't bothered by the riches. Acharei shehaya kvar gadol behanhaga. We know Esav was already a real leader of his people. Ad shehaya lo arba me'os ish hasarim l'mashma aso. That there were 400 people, there was a 400-person entourage. So that's a chashiv ayid. To have a 400-person maybe not such a, I shouldn't say yid, because I don't know if he was a yid, but he's a chash of a person. You know, it's like that old joke that one time the Pope was driving his big fancy car in a long stretch of the highway. There was a limousine person, a chauffeur taking him, and the Pope said, "Stop the car, nobody's on the highway now, and I've got such an itch, I've always wanted to drive this type of car." So the chauffeur didn't know what to do, but if the Pope says, so that's how they switched spots. The chauffeur went to the back, the Pope was driving the car, and the Pope was a little giddy, and he was going like 100 miles an hour. And the cop pulled him over, and the cop walks to the front of the car, and the cop starts shaking. And he runs back, and he calls in, he says, "I don't know who's in the back of the car, but the Pope's driving him." You know, so my point is, I don't know, I lost my train of thought. I think the joke was connected, but that's my point. The point is that when you have 400 people, an entourage of 400 people, that's a chashev of entourage. So the Netziv is very interesting. The Netziv says that Yaakov wasn't really trying to play down his riches. You can't hide what it is. It's a reality. You know, Yaakov had a large camp with him. Yaakov was a rich man by the end of his time with Lavan. You can't hide that. There was no such thing as offshore accounts to hide all your money. Esav was going to see that he was rich. But Yaakov was trying to make the point that he was rich, but he didn't amount to anything in terms of power. And therefore, there's nothing to really be jealous of, particularly because you, Esav, do have a lot of power. It's a very interesting perspective. Now, I included in source number 5, an interesting point from Rabbeinu Bachya, which again takes us back a few centuries, is not 19th century. But I include this because it always amazes me how Chazal never miss a beat. There is never the most subtle of subtleties in the Torah that goes unnoticed. So listen to what Rabbeinu Bachya writes in source number 5. V'haya lehakasav ro'oi sheyakdim hatzon. The Torah should have put tzon, a flock or cattle, before the other. Again, if you look back in source number 1, verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Yaakov sends word to Esav saying, V'hayi li shor v'chamor tzon. I have oxen and donkeys and flocks. So the word tzon is like the fanciest of all of the type of livestock that a person can amass, at least in times of Chazal, at least in times of the Torah. So if Yaakov is sort of, certainly from the Netziv's perspective, if he's not trying to hide his wealth, so as a usual matter, tzon should come first. They talk about the sheep and the goats before you talk about the oxen. So why does Yaakov put it last? So asks Rabbeinu Bachya, V'haya l'hakasav ro'oi sheyakdim hatzon, that tzon should really come first. Kichein derech haksuvim l'hakdiman, mipnei shehu hamin hanichbad v'hanivchar mikol ha-behemos. Tzon usually comes first, because that is the most honored and the most prized of all of the different types of animals. Shekein kasav Avraham, we see by Avraham, ule Avram hetiv bavura, vahi lo tzon uvakar, that Avraham was made a very rich man and he had tzon uvakar, so tzon comes first. Gabi Yitzchak siv, vahi lo miknet tzon umikne bakar, vavudaraba. So again, the Torah puts the word tzon first. Gambi Yaakov ksiv, vayhi lo tzon rabos vishvachos vavadim gmalim v'chamorim, min hatzon kodem l'chol ha-behemos. So tzon is the word that always comes first, yet here it's third. So why is that? So you'll tell me, well, Yaakov didn't want to draw attention to himself. So why did he mention it to begin with? You'll tell me, well, Esav was going to see it. Okay, you could say take such an approach. But Rabbeinu Bachya says that tzon was a very emotionally heavy word to use. Why was that a very emotionally heavy word to use when it comes to Yaakov and Esav? So, who can think about it? So interesting. So the stew that Yaakov made, and that's what he used to buy the Bechor, was made from tzon. Interesting. But go sort of closer back to Parshas Vayishlach, at the end of Parshas two Parshas back, Toldos. So, Lemaisa, when Yaakov went in to steal the brachos, so his mother, Rivka, told him to go to get the goats, and that's the fur that he used to put on his arm, right? Writes Abin Abachi on the top of page 2, Umashalo hikdimo because of hazeh. What's the reason that it's not mentioned over here, or it's not mentioned first here? Lefishalo ratza liftoach lo betzon. Yaakov didn't want to mention the tzon. Through the tzon, nisrakon. What does the word nisrakon mean? It's not such a common Hebrew word. It means to be emptied. It's through the tzon that Esav was emptied from his blessings. V'zacha Yaakov behen. And Yaakov received the blessings. Kenyan shakasov, as Rivka told her son Yaakov, lechna el Hatzon, aval kasher chazru hamalachim al Yaakov. But when the angels come back, hiktim es hatzon. There, the word tzon is already used again in the first item that's mentioned. Vayachat es ha'am asher ito ves hatzon ves habakar. So again, once we're not dealing with directly sending a message to Esav, the word tzon comes back to be listed first. Gam achash nitratze lo v'kibel min chaso hiktim oso hu shamar adni yodea ki eledim rachim v'atzom v'bahakar alo se lai. And when Yaakov and Esav are having the discussion, and Yaakov is not so worried anymore, so again he puts the word tzon first. So I place this Rabbi Nebachya over here because I am always inspired to see how no detail goes unnoticed. That Rabbi Nebachya saw that tzon is usually listed first and now it's third. Wow! Unbelievable. It's a nice idea that he didn't want to draw attention to what was a very contentious item. Good. But here's where our work begins. And I'm going to show you a pasuk, and this pasuk will be a bridge to the Meshech Chachma, another one of the outstanding 19th century commentaries. But before we get to the Meshech Chachma, we'll also have to look at the Netziv and the Medrash on other outstanding sources. But the problem is as follows, that Yaakov is holding back. Okay? What do I mean by holding back? That Yaakov is sending these messengers to test the waters, to see what does Esav feel? Is he going to engage in battle? Is he going to be friendly? Is he going to act like a brother? So he's sending out a feeler, trying to test the waters. And he's telling the messengers to relate to Esav, Vayili shor v'chamor v'tzon, I've got ox and donkeys and cattle, reference to goats and sheep. Okay? We know, however, ladies and gentlemen, that Yaakov had one other type of animal too, that he does not mention, at least initially, to Esav. What animal does he not mention? So he also had camels, gemalim. How do I know that? Because two psukim later, in Pasuk Ches, we looked at Dal Hein Vav, we're skipping Zion, look at Ches. Vayira Yaakov mo, this is in source number 6. Vayira Yaakov ma'od vayetzer lo. Yaakov is very frightened and he's distressed. Vayachat es ha'am asher ito. Vesatzon veshabakar veha gmalim leshnei machanos. So he divided the people who are with him and the flocks and the cattle and the camels into two camps. So what's going on over here? When Yaakov is trying to send messengers to Esav, trying to test the waters to see, does Esav still hate me? Does he love me? He mentions shor, chamor, and tzon. He doesn't mention gemalim. He doesn't make mention of the fact that he has camels. By the way, when he actually sends the gifts to Esav, he will send camels. So why doesn't he make reference to the camels in the initial communication? Are they? That wouldn't be a very fast tank. A camel is going to... Okay.
People rode camels. They didn't ride...
Yeah, they rode camels in
warfare. Interesting. So he sort of wanted to keep his military prowess secret. He didn't want to share everything. It's like, he didn't want to talk about the new F-16s that arrived at Israel. He wanted to keep that, F-35s. He wanted to keep that private.
But you can't keep that private.
What the? Okay. Okay, so any other suggestions why camels are left off the initial communication? Strange. So look. Interesting, higher value. Interesting, okay, I wouldn't be able to evaluate that. You know, comparing the value of ox and donkeys, camels, goats and sheep, I don't know. I haven't owned even one of them. So, although there is a famous story about someone in my wife's family who was able to procure some of these animals and took them to the local girls' high school for a Purim Chagiga. But that's for another time. Okay, so says the Chaim Mikdavar in source number 7, writes in the Tziv as follows. V'hinei zachar shor v'chamor v'lo zachar gamal. Yaakov, in his initial communication, makes mention, it's on the back of the first sheet, he makes mention of the oxen and the donkeys, but he doesn't make mention of his camels, which we know he has. V'gam kasha, ha de zachar eved v'shivcha, shelo sholcham klal. Additionally, he makes mention of the manservants, the maidservants that he has, but when you look at what Yaakov actually sends, the gifts that he sends to Esav, he does not send a servant at all. So what's the point of mentioning it if he's not going to be able to send it as a peace offering? So the Netziv doesn't really help us very much. He writes, Elaba l'rameis inyanim nistarim, kemevuar bebereshis rabba. It must be that Yaakov had other intentions here. He was referencing inyanim nistarim. What does nistar mean? Hidden. So he had hidden messages, subliminal messages, that Yaakov was sending to Esav. The Netziv doesn't tell you what these subliminal messages are. Okay, but Baruch Hashem, I've got Bar Ilan, and I looked up the Medrash Rabbah myself. In source number 8, look at what the Medrash records. Rabbanan Amri, Shur ze Mashuach Milchama. That the Shur references the Milshuach Milchama, that is a reference to the anointed high priest. I'm not 100% sure. That pun was not intended. Shene Emar, Bechor Shoro Hadar Lo. That's a reference to the psukim where Moshe Rabbeinu is giving a bracha, Bechor Shoro, right? Who's that a bracha to? It's a bracha to Yosef. It's a bracha to Yosef. So essentially, Yaakov understood that the shur represented some messianic theme. Either it's the Mashuach Mochama, we know there was a Kohen Gadol who was anointed to go out to war, or it refers to Mashiach ben Yosef. I think that that's more likely the pshat over here. It's a reference to the Mashiach ben Yosef, who is on some level, that's the Mashiach that's going to come first, and I think he's going to engage in battles, and then the second Mashiach ben David will come. I'm not particularly fluent in all of those logistics, okay? But the word shur refers to some messianic idea, a reference, as we see, in Moshe Rabbeinu's brachos in Vizos HaBracha. Chamor. So why does Yaakov mention the chamor? Zemelech HaMashiach. That's actually the king. So now that I see that as I'm speaking, for sure, again, pun not intended, but for sure, the Meshuach Melchama is a reference to Mashiach ben Yosef. And the chamor is a reference to Mashiach ben David. Shene Emar, what does that have to do with a donkey? So we know that the Messiah is going to arrive on a donkey. Why do we know that? Because it's a prophecy in Zechariah and Zechariah. Ani v'rochev al chamor. He will be someone of poverty and riding on a donkey. Okay, so you see chamor is a reference to messianic times. Tzon. What's referenced in Tzon? Elu Yisroel. That's a reference to the Jewish people. Shne Amar, Ve'etna Tzoni Tzomarisi. Okay, so Tzon is used in the context of a prophecy in Yechezkel regarding the Jewish people. Ve'eved v'shivcha. What does the reference to Eved and Shivcha have to do? Hine kenei avadim al yad adonehem. So basically it's a reference to the Jewish people who are servants of God. So it says in the Tziv, Yaakov has multiple meanings in mind when he's sending off his presence. It's not presence yet. When he's sending off the message to Esav initially. So he draws upon Shur and Chamor, Tzon, Eved, V'Shivcha, because those all have references to future times when the Jewish people will rule, our close relationship with the Almighty. So on some level, Yaakov's telling Esav, don't mess. Don't mess. Because I am destined to be my family is destined to herald the Messiah, so on and so forth. I'm the progenitor of the Messiah, so back off, Esav. So multiple messages. So why isn't Gamal mentioned? So if you ask the Netziv, I think the Netziv would tell you, because there is no reference for Gamal. The Jewish people are not compared to a camel. So it's left off the list because it doesn't have that additional message that Yaakov intends to send. That's the Netziv's interpretation. So far, so good? Okay, good. I'm looking for some nods on the internet, but I only see myself. So I'm going to assume that everybody who's watching online, Baruch Hashem, there are a nice amount of people. So you understand as well, I hope. And if you're in Florida, you should just know that it's quite cold over here. So we are all we're all thinking about you and happy that you're enjoying. Okay, I like 25 degree weather. It's very pleasant. Okay, that's not true at all. So says the Meshech Chachma in source number 9, something entirely different. And this is like unbelievable. I would tell you that everything we've seen today so far has been worthwhile to come and to listen. But this Meshech Chachma is just really extraordinary. I've spoken about it on a number of different occasions that the Meshech Chachma had this unbelievable ability. It was brilliant that he was able to weave together Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh in really an unparalleled way. So listen to what the Meshech Chachma writes in source number 9. Vahili shor v'chamor tzon v'eve v'shivcha. Lo amar gama. Yaakov does not make reference to the donkeys, to the camels, Kidila Kaman, the Hagmalim. As the Torah tells us, he has camels. We see that 2 psukim later. We know he's got camels. Deha Inyan. The matter is as follows. Ki, and he quotes a pasuk in Koheles, Ha'elokim asa es ha'adam yashar. God made man straight. Vehema bikshu cheshbonos rabim. And man has made many mistakes, if you will. Okay? So God makes man as straight as possible, gives man the opportunity to do good, and man makes the wrong decisions. Man has many thoughts, and he has many decisions that are ultimately the wrong ones. I am reminded for a moment about a joke that Rav Golvich said many years ago, but it stuck with me because of the word cheshbonos. You know, a young couple, middle of the night, they hear their baby crying. So the man, you know, he wants to get up, he wants to help, but ultimately, you know, oftentimes it's the mom that gets up to heed her baby's cry. So that's alluded to in the pasuk. Rabos machshavos b'levish. There are many thoughts in the heart of man. Vatzas Hashem hitakum. But ultimately, it's the wisdom of God that she will get up. Okay. Men should get up and help their wives too, but I'm just a reminder of that joke as we see the word cheshbonos. Fine, the bottom line is that God creates man straight and good, and it is man who ultimately makes his way very crooked. Ki techilas habriya haya, ki yate atzmo letzad hatov tamid. Originally, God created man with the capacity to only do good. Rak ha'yetzer hara hu mesis bifnei atzmo, and there is an external force. The yetzer hara was something external that tries to corrupt mankind. Amnam ka'asher ba hanachash alchava v'hitil ba zehuma. But when the nachash came and he was able to seduce Chava, he ultimately instilled in Chava zehuma. Zehuma means like a putrid smell or some sort of filth. He put this filth into Chava. Shnis arvu hatov v'hara bo be'atzmo. That when she sinned, ultimately evil was no longer external, but became now intertwined into the existence of humans. Again, these are very lofty ideas, beyond my pay grade, but I'm reading the Meshech Chachma as is. So God originally creates man yashar, straight. Evil is something external. And after Chava sins with the Nachash, so then evil becomes something more internal. It's the Zehuma, it's this filth that fills the bodies of Adam and Chava. V'chemo de targim unklus, as Unklus translates regarding the Eitz Hadas, mina lemeda tov ubish. It's through eating from the Eitz Hadas that man learns both good and evil. Ad, so that was the way it was. Ad shegimel avos biriru vizikako. Until our patriarchs came and tried to sort of sift through the good and the evil. They tried to separate what was part of one person from the time of Adam and Chava. The avos came along and tried very hard to sift out the evil components of our personality. Kimi Avram yatza Yishmael, because Avram gave birth to Yishmael, and that represents the evil that was sort of separate from Yitzchak. Umi Yitzchak Esav, and Yitzchak gives birth to an Esav, but that allows the evil to be separate from Yaakov. Ad sheba Yaakov v'haya mitaso shlema. And Yaakov has 12 children, ultimately, and all of them are kosher, good people. Kid amru zal b'Shabbos, as the Gemara in Shabbos says. Next paragraph. Ve'etzem nefesh ha'yisraeli no telatov. And because the avos worked so hard at producing good, so we know that the essence of the Jewish soul is a good one, a desire to do what's right. Rak se'or shebe'isa. But there is this little external piece that still tries to trick us. We are subjugated by the kings, and that also causes us to sin. But ultimately, it remains something that is external. But since ultimately all Jews want to do good, that's why we're allowed to force a Jew to do good. As the Rambam says, you can force a man to give his wife a get. Isn't that a forced get? That's not allowed. No, says the Rambam, because the Pintel Yid inside wants to do what's right and what's good. You might be scratching your head saying, this is very nice, Rabbi Goldberg. What the heck does this have to do with camels? Okay, we'll get there in just a minute or two. V'harahu inyan b'fnei atzmo. And evil remains something that is separate. It's an isolated entity. It's not part of the essence of a Jew. Ki lo ke'esa v'chavera umos ha'ulam. Basically, the Esav and the nations of the world, they're different. Shenafsham ivasara, their souls desire bad. It still remains enmeshed in their personality because they never had somebody that worked to separate the good and the evil. V'lachein chashudim al haravia kidamru resh ein mamid, and that's why we suspect Gentiles of all sorts of sexual impropriety because they have not refined their souls the same way we have. V'zeh sheshalach lo, and that's the message that Yaakov was sending to Esav. Im Lavan garti v'taryag mitzvos shamarti. I've been living with Lavan. I've adhered to the mitzvos. Ladies and gentlemen, here we go with the reference to the camel. Ready for this? Vayhili shur vachamor. I have two separate sets of animals. I have two separate identities, if you will. Ki hatov v'hara nifradim him. They are separate. By the way, a shur is a kosher animal. A chamor is a non-kosher animal. I have been able, through my hard work and my observance of mitzvos, to separate the good and the evil. V'lo kegamal asher darshu chazal b'medrash al rifka v'atir kavena al hagamalim. Not like a camel, as the medrash focuses on regarding Rifka. Ma gamal yeshlo simen tuma sheyatza mimenu esav. Gamal is unique. What does a gamal have? Gamal has split hooves, right? It has one sign of kashrus, but we know it doesn't chew its cud. Says the Meshech Chachma, although he doesn't write this explicitly, but this is really what he's getting at, is that the Gamal represents somebody that still has two internal identities. That good and the evil are mixed into one. There is the simon of the kashrus, and there's the simon of the non-kashrus. Gamal has both. Yaakov says, Vahili, sure, I have a kosher animal, and external to that is the chamor. I've got two separate identities, not in the sense like he was schizophrenic, not in the sense that he was extremely confused, but in the sense that he was able to see good and evil as two separate ideas. He was able to filter out that which is appropriate and that which is not appropriate. But he doesn't make reference to Gamal because the Gamal represents somebody who still has the lines blurred. Can't tell the difference what's good and what's evil. I understand that our human makeup from the a biological level is the same from a Gentile. But what makes a Jew different is the ability for the Jew to see more clearly what is right and what is not right. What is a value that is held by God and what is not. So Yaakov doesn't make mention of Gamal because Gamal mixes it all up. Writes the Meshech Chachma, V'chein Esav hu chazir me'ya'ar. There is a reference to like some, I don't know, a pig, some sort of undomesticated pig. Kidi Esav b'medrash, ze Edom. The chazir, the pig, is Edom, is Esav. Because the pig also has, what does the pig has? The pig has split hooves, but it doesn't chew its cud. She'etzlo mi'urav ha'siman tuma in siman tahara. Because the pig, Adam, Esav, he has the tuma and the tahara all mixed up. She'kibed aviv v'ima. We know that he had some good qualities, but he also had some very unsavory qualities as well. This is really a long drasha. This is not the place for such a drasha. Okay, but it's unbelievable what he writes. Isn't that unbelievable? Such the way he takes one word, the absence of one word. Gamal, Yaakov doesn't mention Gamal. We know he has it. And he builds a whole, you know, a whole perspective, a whole hashkafa from this one word which Yaakov leaves out. We're not Gamal. We don't have it all mixed up. We can tell we've got our shur, we've got our chamor. We can keep the entities separate. We can filter out the good from the evil. And not so the umos ha'olam. It's a beautiful interpretation. The Meshech Chachma says, I'll tell you something else. He takes a little bit of a different direction. Another understanding why Yaakov does not make mention to Gamal. Says the Meshech Chachma in source number 9, the fourth paragraph. Od yesh etzel ha'yisraeli. There is something else that a Jew has. Ki hu machdish davar. A Jew has the ability to sanctify an item. V'sadehu chayev b'maestros. And even something as earthly as the earth, the ground. You can't get more physical than the ground. But even the ground has capacity for kedusha. We know that we have to tithe that which we grow. We have to give some to the Kohen, we have to give some to the Levi, we have to bring some to Yerushalayim. So the Jew has the capacity to sanctify everything physical in this world. And that's why the rabbis argue, can a non-Jew even take hold of the land of Israel? Because when you take hold of the land of Israel, it's already suffused with Kedusha. I'm not sure if a Gentile has the capacity to do so. So the Gemara argues about that point. Uvehemto, kadosh bebechora, even our animals, again, as earthly as it gets, are sanctified. We have to give the firstborn of the shore, we have to give an oxen and the cattle and the sheep and the goats, all that has to go, the firstborn has to go to the Kohen, right? Meister behemos, a chamor, we have pidyon chamor, the truth is I wove together multiple ideas. There's the concept of bechoros, and there's also the concept of meister behema. There are all sorts of ways that we give the animals and we sanctify them. Lo chen behemas akum. But Gentiles don't do that to their animals. Habe ki behemas hefker. They're like ownerless. They haven't done anything meaningful with their livestock. Sheme etzem kedushas ha-yisraeli hamushvas me'ashem. Our kedusha stems from the Ribono Sholom. She'amar ki ani Hashem kadoshkem. So God is holy, and that holiness trickles down to us. Shofeya shefa kedusha gam al kinyano behemto. And therefore we are able to suffuse our items, the most base earthly items, we can make them holy. What item seems to be excluded from this list? What item you do not have to give the oldest of the litter to the Kohen? And what item does not require Meister Behema? The answer is the gamal, the camel. It's left off the list. So is it an inferior animal because it's left off the list? I don't know. For every reason, the Bon Shalom did not include Gamal in any of these obligations. So Yaakov is trying to send a message to Esav that all of my wealth that I have amassed, it's purposeful. I give it Kedusha. I sanctify it. I elevate it. That's why I have everything. I'm not interested in just the big fancy house, Azoi. I'm interested in the big fancy house to use it for Kedusha purposes. So if that's the message that Yaakov is sending to Esav, what does he leave off the list? He leaves the Gamal off the list because it's not really germane to his point. Yeah, okay, he goes on. It's such a magnificent piece. But that's generally what he is, that is generally the point that he is making. He goes on. Let's read one last piece, then maybe we'll stop. Let's read the next two paragraphs, and then we'll stop. Even when it comes to sanctifying time, Hanivra Hayoser Dak Bemitzius. Ooh, what a sentence. What does that mean? Hanivra, that which is created, Hayoser Dak Bemitzius. What does the word Dak mean? Dak is thin or subtle. The most thin or subtle creation is time. Time is the most elusive matter that a person can receive. It's we don't own time. We don't. It's created. Interesting, the Rambam says that time was not directly created. It was a result of motion. Because if you're going to go from point A to point B, then by definition, time had to elapse. But let's Meshech Chachma might not be taking that perspective. The point is that time is the most subtle of things created. Ein bekoach shum nivra. And nobody that's created, Rak Yitzli Yisrael, only the Jewish people, Shebekocham l'hakdish moed v'yovel. Only we have the ability to sanctify time. Because it's such a sublime, amorphous item, it's very hard to sanctify time. How do you sink your teeth into time? And the Gemara Yushami discusses this idea. So he's just speaking about that the Jew has the capacity to sanctify everything, even the most subtle of items such as time, and the Gentile doesn't have such capacities. Turning the page, and with this paragraph, we'll conclude. And that's why Yaakov is sending this message to Esav, letting him know about the tremendous power that he has. Ki hu ro'i lebechorah. I am worthy of receiving the bechorah because I have the capacity to sanctify the items. V'zesha amar, garti. That's why he uses the word garti. V'tarig mitzvah shemarti. V'ahili shor v'chamor v'tzon. Ki chol eile kedushim bebechorah. All of those animals, the oldest of the litter, is sanctified. Sheshefa kedushas Yaakov shofea gam al miknehu v'kinyano. Because Yaakov's sanctity spills over to his possessions. Eved b'shivcha shehem knulim Yaakov kinyan hasmachi b'ritzon Hashem yisbarach. These are given over to Yaakov to sanctify. Okay, so then you can finish it. You can finish it off. But the point is that the Meshech Chachma is telling us that the Gamal is left off the list because it is not something that has a let's say inherent kedusha such as the other items. It's a magnificent interpretation, beautiful interpretation. Why the Gamal is ultimately left off the list, Bernie?
It's interesting that time is always a mystery in physics. It took Albert Einstein to come along and say that time is really part of creation.
Right.
That time was created when the world was created.
Interesting. Very interesting. Good. Very interesting. So let's just take a moment to review. So we started by reading the first three psukim in our Parshas Vayishlach, where Yaakov takes a very, very weak stance against his brother Esav. And the Radak wanted to know, why is Yaakov so afraid? Didn't he get a bracha from the Ribbono Shel Olam that Hashem will protect him? And yeah, the Radak says, yeah, but Yaakov was afraid. Shema Yigrom Achet, maybe he has sinned and is no longer worthy of the protection that God has promised. So if he's trying to take a very, meek approach, why is he bragging? So the Malbim says, if you read the Pesukim, he's not bragging. He's showing that all of the brachos that the Tata gave never came true through Yaakov. He was a foreigner. He doesn't have any land to show for his name. He's only got the shor v'chamor. It's not such an impressive amount of resources. So there's no reason to hate me. Nothing came true. We saw Rabbi Nebachia noted that when he's giving over this message, he puts tzon last because tzon was used for the trickery. And so he doesn't want to add salt to the wounds. Why does Yaakov pull out and not mention Gamal? We know he's going to send Gamal, so why doesn't he speak about what he owns? So we saw the Amikdavar that says, because each of the items that he speaks about have a deeper reference, and that's the Medrash, the Shor and Chamor, the different Messiahs, the Tzon Ve'eved, where we are the servants of God. Okay, and lastly, we saw the Meshech Chachma, who offered two interpretations. Either the fact that the Gamal has one siman of kashrus but is not ultimately kosher shows that the Gentiles still can't filter out the good and the evil, but Jews can. Or, secondly, that the Jew has the ability, the capacity to sanctify all sorts of items, and the gamal is not on that list. Doesn't mean you can't use the gamal for good purposes, but it's not on the list of kedusha, and therefore it's left off the list. So,
what the bottom line is that what Yaakov attempted to do is to show that the message to Esau,
right,
that he was spiritually superior to Esau.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Multiple layers in the initial communication. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me. All of you.